Welcome in. B Squared Podcast is on the air this week. We record on May 9th, 2016. He is Brian Beto. My name is Jordan Burnfield. We are glad to have you along, and we hope that you are enjoying what you've heard from the podcast. You can now find us on iTunes by searching the B Squared Show or either of our names. You can find us on Podomatic, and you can get us on Twitter at Brian Beto and at Jordan Burnfield. Beto, last week, we joked at the end of the podcast that the Cubs were going to go 7-0 against Pittsburgh and Washington.
We didn't joke anything.
Yeah, two of the best teams in baseball, and the Cubs won 7-0. This was honestly one of the most enjoyable, exciting weeks of Cubs baseball I can ever remember. It was just incredible, and we're obviously geniuses.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we were joking at it. There was no joking. We were dead serious. We guaranteed Rasheed Wallace would be proud that they would go 7-0. I said the only thing that could potentially stop the Cubs going 7-0 was a rain out in Pittsburgh, since we always seem to get rained out there. That was not the case. And what was kind of fun is that they won in pretty much every way you can imagine. They won with hitting a long ball on Friday afternoon against Washington. They took Scherzer deep four times. They scored some crazy runs against Pittsburgh between David Ross getting in a rundown and Matt Caesar coming home to score on the play. And then they cap it off in dramatic fashion in their lone walk-off win of the week and their own walk-off win of the season so far, just because they haven't had too many chances because they've been beating the pants off of everyone this year. And Javi Baez comes up big and whatnot in the 13th. And you just had the feeling once they tied it, you looked yesterday and Arrieta clearly just didn't have great command and the Cubs weren't very sharp in the field. Even the earned run early on, Chris Bryant probably should have made that play. Yep. Then Arrieta doesn't help his own cause with the air. Ben Zobrist bobbles a potential double play ball. And it just looked like, well, you know what? This is just one of those games. They're not going to win them all. It would have been too much to maybe go 7-0. But as soon as they come back and Bryant ties it, it was not even an if they're going to win this game. It was when and how, I felt like. And Javi Baez was able to come through. They walked Bryce Harper six times. All six times was the correct decision. Yeah, it's easy to say that now with the results the way it was, but those were the right moves, and they're just pushing all the right buttons right now. And like you said, this has just been so much fun, and I can't recall a full week of Cubs baseball being as fun and as exciting as what we just saw this past week.
I agree with everything that you said there, especially the fact that you knew that they were going to win the game. I just kept saying I went with Deanna's brother, Matt, to the game yesterday. I kept saying to him, they're going to win. I don't know what inning it's going to happen in. I don't know whether this thing's going to go 16. They're not going to lose the game. There is an aura of invincibility with this team right now, and I think it was completely exemplified in Saturday's win and in Sunday's win against the Nationals, because the Pittsburgh series was a beatdown. Those were just, yep. I mean, they outscored them 20-5, I think, over the course of the three games. And you really never felt like they were going to lose to the Pirates at any time. They just crushed them. With respect to this Nationals series, Thursday was a nice win. Kyle Hendricks was great. Friday was an exciting game, which, you know, you kind of felt like they were going to win the game. But Saturday and Sunday, you're talking about two games in which there were probably four or five times in each of the games where you could have easily argued, this is where they finally lose. This may not be going their way.
Yep.
And every time they had an answer for it. And when teams are going well, when teams have great seasons, Beto, we always look at the unsung heroes that make it happen. Like when the Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup, we've looked at Brian Bickle, who ended up getting paid way too much money because of his contributions 3 years ago, or a Dave Boland or a John Madden.
Dustin Bufflin and the first one, if you remember.
Right. So, I mean, you're always talking about the ancillary characters which help you win. And I understand that it's May 9th as we record today. I have no idea if the Cubs are going to win. But what I do know is when you're getting huge hits from Ryan Kalish and Trevor Cahill is starting rallies for you on offense, things are good. Things are really, really good.
Yep, and you said it. I think I tweeted out something on Saturday. I was like, as we all predicted back in March, when two potential pennant teams Ryan Kalish wins it with a two-run single. That's what we were all expecting when the season kicked off or right before it. But he's able to start one. Tommy La Stella has come through with big hit after big hit. Matt Caesar's already had some big hits this year. I know he's on the DL, but he's been outstanding. And then it was Javi Baez, who started the season on the DL, comes in and hits the big one yesterday. And this sounds so cliche to say it's someone new every day, but it truly has that feel. And you mentioned Trevor Cahill yesterday starting rallies on offense. What? We've talked about the struggles of Jason Hayward at the plate, and they're there. I mean, he's really, really biting at the plate, but he's been so good on defense. The play yesterday that I don't think gets enough attention was the Cubs are down 3-1. Nothing's going their way. You have a feeling they're probably just not going to come away with the win at this point in the game. Bases loaded, two outs. I think it was Ryan Zimmerman pokes one out to right field. Hayward comes in, makes a nice diving slash sliding catch, saves a couple of runs, and that allows the Cubs to stay in it and think they have a chance to win. And, of course, a couple of innings later, they eventually tie it. But it's whether it's a big hit or a big catch or a big pitch or whatnot, it just seems whoever's up to the challenge comes through. And we've seen that again. Justin Grimm able to get out of a bases loaded jam and extras. We saw it with Adam Warren as well. Both times after they walked Bryce Harper to load the bases, it's just been a lot of fun. And this week was almost a perfect week holistically for baseball.
It was. The Cubs were outstanding. I want to go back to something that Tanner Roark said after Sunday's game. He criticized the Cubs for playing scared baseball because Bryce Harper was walked six times and was hit by a pitch and ended up reaching base seven times without an at-bat, which is it's the first time that's ever happened in baseball. So here's my thought on this. I think he's right that it's scared baseball, but the Cubs swept the Nationals. So it sounds like sour grapes to me, right? I mean, that's what this is. You're mad because the Cubs just beat you down, Tanner Roark. And I don't blame the Nationals for being frustrated or mad, but it worked. And the only thing that matters is who wins the games. Now, There is a part of me that even while this was happening, and I agreed with the decision to do it, I think Joe was right in doing it because you keep testing Ryan Zimmerman until he beats you, and he never did. So the whole thing worked out exactly the Cubs' way. But there is a part of me while I'm watching this saying, you know, you should be able to pitch to Bryce Harper. Even Jake Arrieta should be able to pitch to Bryce Harper. Now, a couple of those times, maybe it was just because he couldn't find his command, and I think it was maybe more that than him not wanting to challenge him. But it's not like Bryce Harper is hitting 1,000. He's hitting 265 or so, and I think that you could get him out. That being said, the Nationals are going to have this problem as the season continues if Ryan Zimmerman is that bad consistently because he was challenged. He had 14 runners left on base by himself yesterday, and that's just terrible. And so my view on the whole thing is it is kind of scared baseball and it does kind of stink, but the fact of the matter is deal with it, Tanner Roark, because you guys lost four in a row, and if you guys had played better and Ryan Zimmerman had hit the ball a few times, I guarantee you the Cubs would have pitched to Bryce Harper.
Yeah, and a couple of points there. First, Dusty Baker has to move Daniel Murphy to the four spot in the order and Ryan Zimmerman down. I don't care about this alternating lefties and righties when it influences the amount of pitches your best player sees that drastically. If Daniel Murphy was in the four spot in the order, I don't know if the Cubs do that, where they certainly walk Harper on certain occasions, but I don't know if they walk him with runners on first and second twice if Daniel Murphy, another left-handed hitter, who's knocking the cover off the baseball, hitting around 400 with some pop on top of that, is behind him. So that's point number one. Second, it's you said sour grapes. That's what it is. I think if you asked Tanner Roark that same question today, the frustration might have worn off and the emotion might have worn off a little bit. I don't want to crush him. I know he's a Chicago kid. He's a good pitcher. He's probably frustrated. He wanted to be the guy that beat Jake Arrieta, that sort of thing.
Everybody wants to be. But, and listen, I get it too. I don't want to crush him either. It's just don't say stuff like that. because it makes you look bad, right?
I think it was dumb. Like, it's not scared baseball. You're trying to win the game.
Well, but it is kind of scared baseball. I mean,
do you not? Should they have pitched to not? I'm not calling Bryce Harper Barry Bonds, but to that lineup relative to it with Ryan Zimmer next, he was like Barry Bonds.
Oh, you're right. Listen, I agree with what they did.
The math says that you have a better chance of winning a baseball game pitching to Ryan Zimmerman with the bases loaded than Bryce Harper with runners on first and second. So why would you do it the opposite way? It was just stupid to me. And I understand that they're frustrated, so that's why I'm not going to crush him. But if somebody else, I feel like this was something Goose Gossage or something like that would say. So, I think if you ask the Nationals, they might have a different tune today. They just got their butts whipped, you mentioned, and I don't have a problem with it all. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a Cubs fan. It happened for them. I'd feel the same way if it was any other team or some team doing it against the Cubs.
Listen, I agree with you. And what I'm saying is I do think it is kind of scared baseball. I think it's a negative connotation to phrase it that way. So you could phrase it another way, and that would be fine too. But it is kind of scared baseball. But you know what? It works, and it was the right move. Like I said, I agreed with what Joe did. It obviously worked out. And you keep picking on the guy that hasn't beaten you until he does. I completely understood the strategy, and it obviously was the right strategy because the results are what they are. But, you know, it is kind of surprising because I think that Bryce Harper might be the best player in the game. I guess he is the best player in the game, him or Trout. I mean, you can have your pick. We've had this discussion before, but I still think that you can get him out. And I always felt like Dusty took a lot of flack that was unnecessary. But I did think that over the course of this four-game series, that Dusty did things that he always does as a manager, which contributed to the Nationals losing. Is that fair? I feel like
yes. He
is a good manager for the team that he is with. He is good at turning around teams that have veteran players that he can get the most out of them. I understand the value of Dusty Baker, and I think that he's a good manager for this Nationals team because last year was a dumpster fire because they had the wrong guy, and they've already turned things around because he fits what they're trying to do perfectly. But the guy is old school, and he doesn't use new age thinking, and he doesn't adjust, in my view, the best way he can always. And I'm not saying that I know more about baseball than him. I'm not. He is way more accomplished in baseball than I will ever be, obviously. But some of the criticism is fair because I'm watching this game. I'm watching each of the games saying, man, the Cubs are going to burn him for this. And they did.
Yeah.
And I thought when they brought, I forget who it was in the moment, but when they brought in a pitcher with the bases loaded to face Kalish, the left-hander, that is such a Dusty move because he's trying to go lefty-lefty, which to me is sort of an antiquated thing. And when you bring a pitcher into the game with the bases loaded that hasn't pitched yet in the series, that is not as experienced, you're now saying to this guy, well, you can't walk him, you can't throw four balls, so you better throw a strike, and it increases the hitter's advantage so much. I mean, Joe doesn't do stuff like this very often. And I think that Joe is one of the few managers in the game that makes a big difference in terms of wins and losses. But, I mean, Dusty still does this stuff. And it was like when we were watching the 03 and 04 Cubs beat him, I was having flashbacks to the times which we used to watch Dusty manage the Cubs. He's a good manager, but he's a very patterned, very old school guy. And I think it burned the Nationals in this series too.
Yeah, I totally agree. There is, and I'm like you, I don't tend to rip on Dusty too much. I think I tweeted out this week and I think it's ridiculous that he still gets booed at Wrigley Field. Like,
I don't
want to
rip Dusty. I like Dusty.
Do. And it's been a decade, like get over it since he's been the Cubs manager. But I'm with you in the sense that there were a few times, and you referenced one of them already, the situation with Kalish. I even thought there was one yesterday. It was a subtle move that he didn't do. However, I was going around thinking, like, what manager would do this? And Jim DeShays called him out on the broadcast yesterday there was a situation, and I can't remember exactly the details. However, it was when Tommy La Stella came up with a couple of guys on a chance to take a dent into the deficit when they were down 3-1. He actually hit the ball pretty well out to right field, just lined out.
Yep.
They didn't even have a left-hander warming up in the bullpen. They didn't have anyone, knowing that that's the Cubs' best bat off the bench at the time was Tommy La Stella. And you don't have to bring a left-hander in, but the fact that you don't even show a lefty as a decoy to get Joe to even think about using someone else or not burning La Stella there early, because I think it was the seventh or sixth inning at the time, like that is just 1-0 baseball 101. And that was just a subtle thing that I thought he kind of got destroyed on. And then there was a couple other pitching moves. I think I've already mentioned one. I can't believe that Ryan Zimmerman's still hitting behind Bryce Harper. And that may change now with the way the teams have approached him, because Ryan Zimmerman hasn't hit for power or for average and hasn't walked this year. So
and Daniel Murphy is still on. I mean, that guy, I think the Cubs do not have any scouting reports on him.
I don't think anyone does.
Right. I mean, I know he's hitting 400, but the Cubs can't get him out. And I'm not.
It's unbelievable.
Listen, I'm not complaining. The Cubs are incredible. They've just had an amazing week. It just is like he is one of those guys that, and you watch his body language when he's at the plate against the Cubs. It's like he thinks he's going to homer every single time up. And he still rocketed the ball all over Wrigley Field this weekend, despite the fact that the Cubs won the series and they swept them and they played great. Daniel Murphy is rocking. And if you got a guy hitting 400, he should bat behind Bryce Harper, because I got news for you. If Daniel Murphy was batting behind Harper, there is no way they walk Harper six times yesterday.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, exactly. Way.
That's what I was getting at before. Yeah. And Daniel Murphy, like you said, he just looks so comfortable, and it seems like he sees the ball like a beach ball every time he faces the Cubs. The only thing that was frustrating about getting Ryan Zimmerman out with those situations, I want to say it was frustrating, but since the Cubs couldn't score until the 13th, Daniel Murphy would lead off pretty much every inning, it felt like, because Zimmerman always made the last out of the previous inning, and he would walk or get a hit or whatnot. So, and that was tough. So then the Cubs would have to navigate out of more jams and things of that nature. However, it was, I just don't understand why they don't have him hitting up, and that may change. It's earlier in the year. I'm not a huge lineup construction guy. Right. But this seems like a fairly simple fix. So we'll see what the Nationals do. But again, just a fun week for the Cubs, and no rest for the weary with San Diego coming in tonight if the rain can hold off.
You know what's amazing? We've talked about the run differential, which as we record today on Monday, May 9th, is now at 102, which is just preposterous.
Yeah.
We look at the fact that they've allowed 82 runs, and the Mets are the only other team in the National League to allow fewer than 90, and the Cubs and the Mets are the only two teams in baseball that have allowed fewer than 90 runs. I mean, we talk about the pitching has been incredible. The hitting has been great. They've scored the most runs in the league. We know all this stuff. Now we're getting to the point, Beto, where they're 24-6. They're off to the best start through 30 games since the 84 Tigers that won the World Series. They are off to their best start in the franchise since 1907. They have a run differential akin to the 98 Yankees and 27 Yankees. I mean, we're talking about some of the greatest teams in baseball history, and we're now having real conversations about the Cubs being a historically great team. I realize what day it is. I realize that it's not going to matter unless this continues and they win enough games and they ultimately win the World Series. But I never thought that they were going to be this good. I mean, this is what we're watching right now as Cub fans. I mean, there are Cub fans listening right now who are generations older than us who have never seen a Cubs team like this. No one has seen a Cubs team like this. And every day I'm watching it, I find myself trying to appreciate the greatness of what we're watching. It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And it's unprecedented for what we've seen, certainly in our lifetimes. And I think people expected them to be potentially the best team in the league. However, it's almost impossible to predict a team of this magnitude, because there's only a select few that have had a start similar to this. I remember right before the season, Fangraphs did a piece, just it was kind of like a fun piece, on the odds of the Cubs potentially replicating what those 84 Tigers did that you just brought up a couple of minutes ago. And the odds were so minute, so small, because of the luck factor, the randomness, staying healthy, the schedule, things of that nature. And they said, I can't remember the figure, but it was just preposterously low. And yeah, they're not going to mimic exactly that record. However, it's insane that they're in the exact same ballpark as those 84 Tigers. And they're not through 40, I know through 30. They're playing 800 baseball, and six losses is insane. If they go 500 the rest of the way, which seems nearly impossible with how talented and how good they are, but if they just went 500, they would finish exactly at 90 wins.
Right.
That tells you how good this start is that they could just play average baseball the rest of the way and still have a chance to potentially get in the playoffs. That's how good they've been. And they've got six home games coming up this week. They have a subpar opponent coming in first. I know they've struggled against teams at times like the Rockies and had a rough one against the Braves. They got a potential to keep running the table this week at home. And I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead of myself. If this keeps up this week, it's going to be unbelievable talking about what their record could potentially be next week.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Nate Silver, do you ever look at 538.com and look
at
his predictions? So right now, again, we're recording Monday, May 9th, so take this for what you will at this date, okay? They're projecting the Cubs to go 107-55, okay? Just for perspective, the next best team is the Mets at 93-69, okay? So they have the Cubs 14 games better than the next best team in the game. They have the Cubs' playoff chances at 98%. Their division chances at 89%, and they're winning the World Series chances at 23%. The Mets are next best at 8%.
Yep.
23-8.
23%. This is baseball, though, and statistically, over, I think, since the divisional era began, where they had the extra wild card round, which makes it increasingly more difficult for any team to win the World Series, including the favorite. That I think it's somewhere between 15 to 20% where the odds on favorite or the team with the best record has actually won the World Series. So 23% is actually pretty high because, you know, any team can catch fire as we've seen in the playoffs in the past and injuries happen, so on and so forth. It's such a small sample of best of five and best of seven series. 23% is absurd on May the 9th. I don't recall them ever having a prediction or an odds that measured a team that high this early on.
I honestly can't even believe that number. And again, who knows? It's not like Nate Silver can predict everything, although he does have a very good record on certain things. And we are talking about the Cubs, so who knows? But it is amazing to look at numbers like this.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, Jake Arrieta struggled. I mean, he was not Jake Arrieta sharp. He had a lot of trouble with his command. Joe Maddon thought his stuff was outstanding. He just really couldn't control it. And it's not, I don't think it's a big deal because Arrieta has been so incredible over the last year that at some point you had to figure that, you know, he was going to come down to earth a little bit. But you look at Arrieta's outing, throws 100 pitches in five innings and gives up two earned runs and six hits. And although it really should have been three because he made the error. I hate when that happens.
Right.
And he strikes out seven. He walks four, though one of them was an intentional walk. The guy is still 6-0 with a 1.13 ERA. He's still incredibly dominant, but we have seen over the last three starts, and maybe it's because he's so amazing that we're now trying to nitpick to the nth degree on him, but we've seen lately that he's had a little bit of a command issue early in games, like where he's trying to make the adjustment to get his pitches over the plate, to find his release point, and then he's fine. We didn't think going into the year, remember the rhetoric was that Jake is not, there's no way he could do what he did last year again. He's going to have to come back to earth in some way. But I thought it was interesting that Joe said that the difference between Jake yesterday and Jake in the past is that Jake didn't have his best command, but was able to mitigate the damage. And because of how smart he's become as a pitcher, it only translated to three runs and five innings of two earned as opposed to him getting bombed and walking eight or something like that. And so I thought it was interesting, the distinction that he made there. And I'm not concerned, but I do think that that's an interesting comment from Maddon, that he looks at Jake as a pitcher now who, even when he doesn't have his best stuff or doesn't have his best command or is trying to find it, he's now so good that he has learned ways to limit it. And again, that was also against the Nationals, one of the best teams in the game. You figure that he might have been able to have those kind of struggles against one of the worst teams in the league. Maybe he doesn't even give up a run. But against the Nationals, he was able to limit the damage by being a smart pitcher. What did you think of that?
I think what Madden has insinuated about Jake, and I think he's made some points about this, and from just a fan's perspective, I think one of the most underrated parts about Arrieta is his self-awareness on the mound. And I'm talking about, he knows what he has going that day, what he doesn't, and what he needs to improve on to have a successful outing. Certainly, he does. He's not going to go out and have his best command or his best stuff, but he's going to learn what works, what is the best version of himself for that particular day, and he's been able to execute. We've had so many pitchers, I feel like, that wear a Cubs uniform that have great stuff, and then there's a day where they just don't have it and they just can't figure it out. A guy that pops to mind, and I don't want to crush him, but Jeff Samardzija, I feel like, was a guy that would give up these huge innings, and it was like, what are you doing? You went four shutout, one thing doesn't go right, and then the world ends.
Right. And remember Javi Vasquez?
Javi Vasquez was like that too, right? When he with the Expos and the Yankees.
Right, the Expos, the Yankees, and even the White Sox. You get him through five, he's fine, sixth inning, disaster.
Yeah, exactly. And Arrieta is just so self-aware that he's able to figure out, you know, ways to navigate out of certain situations, figure out what's working for him. Yeah, it certainly helps that he has the stuff that he does, and he has pitches that he can choose from that all are more than capable of getting better than average major leaguers out at a frequent pace. So I'm with you, and I think Joe, I think he made a comment like, I don't even need to talk to the guy. Like, all I can do is mess him up. And that's a pretty self-aware thing for a manager to say as well. And Arrieta clearly hasn't had his best command. You mentioned specifically earlier on in games. Even the no-hitter, he really struggled at the outset with his command. He ended up walking four guys in the game. He still's just been able to figure it out. And that's what's made it so impressive, is in addition to the stuff and being able to locate it for the most part, he's figured out what's worked for him on that given basis.
So now the Cubs are 24-6. They have this incredible record. They're the best team in baseball, and they have, as you mentioned, San Diego next for three games, a team that has been bringing up the rear in the National League West. They're 13-19 as we record today, and then they face the Pirates again. And I know that sometimes this seems like media narrative, but it does seem like the Cubs are in the Pirates' heads a little bit. After the wild card game last year and the first series this year, I don't know what's going to happen this coming weekend, but it just does seem like there's a little bit of a change in dynamic.
I think so too, and I agree. We joke about how we don't like media narratives and fan narratives and things like that, and I do agree with that, but I think it's hard to completely shut the door on the possibility of that being the case, being the wild card and the fact that the Cubs get all this attention all the time. And the Pirates are a team that did kind of what the Cubs did. They were bad for a while. They were bad for a lot longer than the Cubs were, and they turned it around rather quickly. And now they're a perennial winner, and they can score a lot of runs, and they have a lot of fun players and a lot of a good young farm system. They're just not getting the attention, and the Cubs have dwarfed them in the standings already this year. They've beaten up on them in their home ballpark. They knocked them out of the playoffs. And there's clearly some sort of level of frustration that has boiled over. Sean Rodriguez, I'm sorry, he's just a clown.
Oh, my God. That guy is the worst.
I have no problem with anyone else on the team, but it's natural to get frustrated when you keep getting beaten up. And it just feels like they probably, when they play the Cubs, they're just waiting for something to go wrong where they're ultimately not going to win the game. It just kind of has that feel between when the two teams play right now.
Yeah. And so now, Beto, at 24-6, they're playing 800 ball. We know that that's probably not going to stay, but I mean, they are on pace to win 129 games right now, which is absurd. But, you know, we look at where this is, and, you know, maybe the Cubs are going to challenge history this year, and maybe they're going to challenge 116 wins, which is their record from 1906. I don't know. But if this thing continues at the rate that it is, let's say they do win 116 games, something like that, as crazy as that sounds. Does it now become the Cubs have to win the World Series in 2016, or this year was like much ado about nothing? I know that sounds insane, maybe on the surface, But if the Cubs end up challenging history or breaking the wins record, it's like with the Golden State Warriors, right? The Warriors won 73 games and they beat the 95-96 Bulls. If the Warriors don't win the NBA championship, it almost feels like they failed, right? I know that that's ridiculous and that just sounds so black and white, but if the Bulls, when they had won 72, if they hadn't won the title, wouldn't it have felt like they came up short? And when the Patriots went 16-0 and they lost in the Super Bowl to the Giants, it was like, well, they went 16-0, but Mercury Morris was still popping champagne after that game. And so I can't stand them, by the way. Don't even get me started on the 72 Dolphins. But my point is that it just, if the Cubs end up doing something incredibly special in the regular season, Joe keeps saying embrace the target. I think he's the right manager and the perfect manager for this kind of scenario, because he keeps things so loose, and they the mariachi band for Cinco de Mayo, and they do the goofy suits and all this stuff. But it's like, are we going to get to that point this year? Because we went in talking about how the window is open now for the next, 5 years or whatever it is. And I still think that that's true. And I still think that even if they don't win the World Series this year, it's not as though they couldn't win it next year or the year after that or the year after that. But if they end up challenging history, it's like you have to finish the deal. And that sounds crazy on May 9th. I know I'm qualifying this a lot, but this is sort of the way I'm starting to think about this.
Yeah, and there's going to be a perception of that, if that does indeed become the case, by some fans. And I'm sure Rivals teams fans will be like, oh, the Cubs choked again, that sort of thing. However, and the Warriors comparison is interesting, and the Cubs are nowhere near being in that discussion. And
not
I know
yet.
You mentioned that,
not
too,
yet.
Because
yeah.
There's it's still plenty of games left. However, if a situation where they came close and they led the league in wins by a large margin, as we said before, it's when you have the best record in baseball, it's you're far less than majority of the time does that team actually win the World Series. The NBA is a little bit different in that regards, as you can pretty much pinpoint going into the year that there's about 3 to 4 teams that actually have a legitimate chance of winning the title.
It's way more individual.
And so the Warriors going into this, it was pretty much them, San Antonio, maybe Cleveland, that sort of thing. And even the NFL, it's not as exact maybe as the NBA, where you can't narrow it down as much. There's still more than baseball. So I think there'll be a perception of that. I think it's a wrong perception to think, yeah, I would be just destroyed if they had this record-breaking win season and didn't go anywhere in the playoffs. It happened to the 2001 Mariners. They won 116 games,
right,
got bounced by
that's the
Yankees,
like,
in the ALDS.
We're talking about that Mariners team now, but they're remembered because they tied the wins record and then lost.
Yeah, they are. You're right. That will be a stigma if that somehow gets close to that this year. And yeah, they lost. That was Lou Piniella's Yankees with Ichiro and Brett Boone and everyone. And they lost to a Yankees team that had won 3 straight World Series. But then the Yankees went out to lose to the Diamondbacks. That's what people do remember. You're right. The fact that they tied the wins record, but everyone obviously thinks that the 98 Yankees are a lot better than the 2001 Mariners, because the 98 Yankees, although they won 2 less games, they went on to win the World Series. So they're known as like the best team of this generation. And so the Cubs obviously don't want to be in that situation. And we'll see if it happens when it gets closer. But I don't know if it's anything's going to be close to that, but it's just hilarious to think that we can even talk about something like this on May 9th because of how unbelievable the start has been.
Right. I mean, it is hilarious. And that's
ridiculous.
That's why I think it's almost ridiculous to have the conversation, but people are now comparing. I heard Kornheiser and Wilbon compare the Cubs to the 27 Yankees last week on television, and they were serious.
Yeah.
I'm hearing people like Peter Gammons and John Heyman and some of these big MLB reporter analyst experts talking about this Cubs team as a historic team. And it sounds crazy on May 9th. And if you ask anyone around the team, they keep saying, well, they haven't done anything yet. I get all that. And I understand the way they're thinking about it. And they have to think this way. But we're not on the team. And I'm watching them the way that they won the games this past week. When we talked about it at the beginning of the podcast, Beto, maybe we could say that 5 of the 7 games they probably win in any normal scenario. But to win the way they did Saturday and Sunday, this is not just a normal baseball team. It's not. And think about the fact that they're 24-6 and Kyle Schwarber's out for the year. Miguel Montero has been on the disabled list for the last, you know, what, week and a half. Matt Caesar went on the DL. You're getting contributions from Ryan Kalish, from, you know, guys that you never would have thought would be contributing. There was not one person on this roster that hasn't made a significant contribution. And Jason Hayward has done nothing offensively, nothing so far this year. And you're winning despite that. I mean, it's just, I can't even believe what we're seeing. And not just because it's the Cubs, but you rarely see a baseball team that is firing on all cylinders like this. Like Bryce Harper said after the game yesterday, he said the Cubs are a hot team, but then he went on to say, he goes, well, we could say that they're hot, but really they're just a great baseball team. And that's what they are. They're a great, great baseball team. And I always believed that Theo and Jed could turn them into a winner. And I always believed that they could be a team that could compete for World Series championships, because you saw the track record in Boston, and it's clear that these guys know what they're doing and are really bright and maybe the best management in the game. But this is beyond anything I could have ever thought. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And it just gets you excited to wake up every day and think about, all right, do we play today? And the first thing I do is, I know pretty much what time they play every day, but I check the weather. I'm like, is this one going to get canceled? I'm a little nervous about tonight's game, if it's going to get banged or not. I know it's supposed to rain tonight and tomorrow. I'm actually going on Wednesday night on a rooftop, which I'm looking forward to as well. And I think it's supposed to be like 77. So
we'll see. Okay, so let me ask you this. When you go to a rooftop, how much of the game do you actually watch?
Me? I'm insane. I mean, I'll watch pretty much all of it. There's been a few times. I went on my bachelor party to a rooftop in, which would have been 2013, and the Cubs were playing the Cardinals. But it was mid-July. I mean, they were way out of it already.
And the 2013 Cubs were horrible.
Yeah, and they were out of it already. And Matt Garza had started. I watched a decent amount. And you want to beat the Cardinals, it's more fun, especially since I had friends that were Cardinals fans that were there. You're obviously less into it. And I've been to a Cubs game at a rooftop, my brother's bachelor party, where I think it was even April, but it was 2011 when we knew they were going to be god-awful again.
Your brother, Anderson Cooper?
Well, yeah, exactly. My brother looks like Anderson Cooper. And so that's a different situation.
Great,
but when you go to a rooftop now, when they're good, you want to be into it. Certainly there's going to be people that they're going to wear blue, and they might be the only blue thing that they own, or that, or they never wear it because they're not Cubs fans, or they just want to kind of blend in. But I'll be locked in from first pitch, because we have on Wednesday night, I think it's John Lackey. Yeah, John Lackey versus Drew Pomeranz. So it's actually not a bad pitching matchup. The Padres have had some decent starters. I know they've had some luck. Some of their numbers maybe aren't as indicative as how good they've pitched, and the fact that they pitch at Petco Park. But yeah, Drew Pomeranz was one of those guys. Remember coming up, or all the stink was about him, and he was supposed to be great. He's finally starting to turn it around a little bit.
But see, I'm surprised that you can go sit on a rooftop and actually watch the game, because I've been up there a few times, and one time it was for a graduation party from college, and then a couple of other times I'd been up there for various, you know, events that I'd been invited to. I never watched the game. And it's not that I don't want to watch the game, and maybe it was because the team was, I guess in 2008 I went, and they were good, so I paid more attention. But you're so far from the field, and I'm not saying that it's not a great experience, it's a blast, but I'm usually having a beer, having a burger, talking to people. The game is just sort of on.
Yeah. Way more of a social environment than it is sitting in the actual seating.
Yeah, ball. I mean, you're not going
not
to
that,
really
that,
watch
not
the
that
game.
Everyone inside the ballpark is tuned into every single pitch. We know it's more of an event thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually developing a nice little buzz at that game and not paying that much attention to what's on the field.
Oh, that's definitely happening. The key is this: what you gotta, when you get to a rooftop, I think they usually open them up like an hour before the game. That's when you really gotta get your money's worth, because it's clearly more expensive than a regular ticket, but it's like an all inclusive sort of trip to the Cubs game. So you get your, because some rooftops have all the works. They'll have the Italian beef, the jardinera, the dog burger. Sometimes they have a soft serve. Then you get started with the liquid. See, and by the time the game starts, if you can fit all that in, then you're in pretty good shape where you're like, all right, I've got my food. Now I just need to refill between innings and up into the seventh inning, and I'm going to watch the game.
Because a man
sort of
like
thing.
You,
so
who
there
has
becomes
such
a lot of strategy involved. You got to get there right when the rooftop opens.
Oh, yeah. Because a man like you, who enjoys an Italian beef as much as anyone I know.
Yes.
I don't see you watching the game. I see you having an Italian beef. I see you having a beer. I see you enjoying yourself. And, you know, there might be a baseball game going on in the background.
Yeah, and you're right. But, I mean, this year, you got to watch, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's actually the first game I'll be going to this season. So, I got to soak it all in. So, that's why you got to get there early. Got to get your food right away. So, it doesn't become a necessity that in the fourth inning that you need an Italian beef when the Cubs have the heart of the order due up. That sort of thing. And the fact that, you know, you're going to have a few beverages there, so you got to get a good baseline in early with some nice little breads there so that you're doing pretty well and can remember when Hector Rondon comes in the ninth inning to lock it down.
Listen, if you are lucid when Hector Rondon comes in, I think you did a great job in the bleacher or in the rooftops or in the bleachers, frankly. But I think either one, if you know when it's the ninth inning, it's a great job. By the way, I am now 5-2 at Wrigley this year, which is a good record, except I'm playing 714 ball. The Cubs
You're
are playing
below.
800 ball. Right. So I've seen two of the six losses in person.
The Braves game?
Yep.
And the Rockies?
Yep. Chatwood. And I went to which was the other loss? Was it the Braves game?
The Sunday, the extra inning game?
No, I didn't go to that one.
The first Rockies game? Did you go to a couple of them? How many games lost at home? Three?
It might have been that one. Yeah. Or
then
maybe it was
the Colorado.
It was one of the first weeks, but I've been to
two
losses.
You can't go anymore because you're bringing the winning percentage down.
Listen, I don't know what to say. I'm sorry, but the Cubs are going to have to win despite my attendance, whenever it is, because I will be there.
I made a joke on yesterday when I thought they were going to lose. I was like, gosh, I'm just going to avoid Wrigley Field on Sundays because the Cubs were about to drop to 0-3 on Sunday games at Wrigley Field between that Rockies game and then the extra inning game against the Braves. And I thought they were going to go down yesterday.
Right.
I was like, well, we're not going on Sundays anymore because they apparently they're about to be 23-3 on any days that are not home games on Sundays. But couldn't do it against, but they were able to come through. But that was my first thought yesterday, as crazy as that sounds.
By the way, I know because the Padres are in town, this gives me a very convoluted segue to talk about this. Did you see what happened Saturday night between the Padres and the Mets?
Which, Bartolo Colon's homer?
That might be the best single event in the Major League Baseball season.
Yep.
42.
Talking about a 24-16, but a 42-year-old pitcher homering in a meaningless situation, I agree with you, might have been the most remarkable thing that we could see all year.
And then Gary Cohen nails the call by yelling, "The impossible has happened."
That was awesome. If you don't enjoy watching Bartolo Colon hit, you hate America, you hate puppies, you hate babies. It's that simple.
I agreed, because that was... When I saw that, because I remember I got home, I forget where we were, and I check my iPad, because I usually like read a little something before I go to sleep, and I have like the MLB notifications that come up from MLB at bat or whatever, and it says, watch, Bartolo Colon hits home run for them. I'm like, wait, what? I literally had, and a lot of times... They put these videos in your notifications. I don't watch them. I'm like, whatever. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to see this. And I was cheering. I was openly cheering for Bartolo.
He got all of it too.
Dude, he crushed it. It was not even close. It was not like barely over. It was a bomb.
Yeah. Who? I don't even know. Who was that against? James Shields?
It was. Dude. Yes.
That sound right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. And they won't get James Shields this week, or they won't get former Cub Andrew Kashner. He pitched yesterday. He lost to Matt Harvey.
Well, so I mean, listen, Bartolo's a good hitter. I don't know if he's better than Trevor Cahill, but I mean, he's good.
Or Jason Hamill in the NLDS.
Oh my God. The Cubs pitchers really can rake.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's made them 24-6.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen what Jake Arrieta has done with the bat. even Lester looks comfortable up there, and Hamels had some big hits, and I know it goes back to last year. And then Travis Wood, I was waiting for him to get something started last night because we know he can hit. He probably doesn't get the reps in BP as he used to, just because he's a reliever now, but he can rake it a little bit. I'm still waiting for Kyle Hendricks and John Lackey to turn around. They don't look all that comfortable.
No.
But I'm just assuming at some point those two guys will win a game with their bat.
Although, didn't Lackey have an RBI single last weekend against the Nationals? I think he did.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So there you go. But, all right, so this week they are playing the Padres for three, day off Thursday, so all of us will just be in the fetal position.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Nothing to watch. Actually, Thursday they're going to play the makeup game for tonight's game against the Padres.
There you go. So I don't know what to do tonight.
Right. So there's that, and then they have three against the Pirates going into the weekend. So there should only be six games this week or fewer. Brian Beto, last week you and I sarcastically said that they were going 7-0, and they promptly went 7-0. So what are you predicting this week?
First of all, stop saying jokingly and sarcastically when we predicted 7-0 last
Brian,
week.
Brian, we're never sarcastic.
7-0. And this week, it's going to be a down week for the Cubs because they're only going to go 6-0 just by virtue of only playing six games this week. So I'm guaranteeing victory on Wednesday night because I will be at the rooftop. So I need that one. And then you look at the rest of the matchup. Cesar Vargas, who's been pretty good. Colin Ray's been pretty good. Their luck's about to run out with Lester and Hendricks going. And then Friday, we have the against Pittsburgh. And we just know that Pittsburgh just doesn't do well against the Cubs. So it's a guaranteed 6-0. We will be 30-6 by the time we do this next podcast.
I hope you're right. No, the other prediction I
are
want
you surprised of my eternal optimism? Is that to shock you at all?
No. Also, your prediction for how many innings you will actually consume Wednesday night.
How many innings will I consume?
I mean, how many outs are you actually watching?
Well, who's Lackey's pitching?
Think so.
Well, I think what will happen is I'll watch the first four without missing any, and then once I realize he's perfect through four, I'll watch the entire 27.
Well, that's fair. I mean, do you think that the Cubs will give up a hit this week?
That's another good question. Sorry, I'm laughing at that, but I'm also laughing because I'm watching George Costanza at like the U.S. Open right now, and he's got ice cream all over his face, and I have it on mute, and I'm watching Seinfeld too, and I'm kind of laughing at both. Right. I figured you'd appreciate the Seinfeld reference as well.
That's incredible. I would love to talk. I mean, this is the summer of the Cubs. Forget the summer of George.
The summer of George. The summer of the Cubs. I respect that.
This is the summer of the Cubs. Everyone is sitting back in the lazy boy chair that they bought as a gift but never gave to the guy. And
exactly.
They're just sitting there and enjoying Cubs baseball. All right, my prediction for the week is that the Cubs will go 4-2 because at some point they're going to have to lose a game. And I'm predicting series victories against the Padres and the Pirates. But
so 2 out of 3 in both is what you're going with?
Yes. I mean, listen, I could go 6-0 here, but that would just get in the way of the fact that they're then going on, I think, a 10-game road trip. Or 9-game road trip where they're going to go 9-0. So at some point they're going to have to lose a game, right?
Well, you've always been a controversial figure. So saying 4-2 is just going to spark up all sorts of social media anxiety across the map. So yeah. I get it. I get where you're going. I get the angle that you're going with.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I like to ruffle feathers. Okay. So that's going to do it for our podcast this week. We hope you enjoyed basking in the glory of the Chicago Cubs for the last 7 days, because we sure have. You can follow us on Twitter. He's at Brian Beto. I'm at Jordan Burnfield. Our podcast is on iTunes, so please find us there and subscribe. The same thing is true at Podomatic and our Facebook page, Brian Beto.
Yeah, B squared. Just search for that, B hyphen squared. And we should probably pop up right away, and we'll post the link to that as well each and every week. Feel free to share it. Subscribe on iTunes and Podomatic, as you mentioned. And it's a lot more fun to listen to us talk about the Cubs when the Cubs are winning, because God knows we've done it when the Cubs were not winning, and we appreciated all the listeners then, but certainly more enjoyable to talk about when they're playing 800 baseball.
It's amazing. They're playing 800 baseball. 129 wins is within reach. It's, I mean, 156 is still technically within reach.
Now you're talking.
If they never lose again. And then, actually, let's be fair, it's not 156, it's 167, because that includes all the games in the playoffs as they win the World Series.
And now you're really talking.
Yes. So, all right, Beto, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, have a good one, man.
All right, that is Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. Thanks for listening to the B Squared Podcast. We will talk to you next Monday.